WMD, RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up together into one tasty, tummy-pleasing treat? I know that you are. And I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, here with Chef Luca, doing one of the most favorite things I can participate in the whole wide world, which is our culinary CPR segment. You know Chef Luca. You know him. You love him. You can't live without him. He is Chef Luca Paris. He owns and operates Luca's Mediterranean Cafe in Keene, New Hampshire. If you're up in that neck of the woods, you got to stop in. It's everything that you think it'll be and then more. You've seen him on TV, crushing competition on Food Network. You've seen him on PBS with Chef Esposito, teaching her a few tricks on how to properly do Italian cuisine. Chef, thanks so much for being here again, my friend. I'm ready to learn from you.
What's up, brother? It's good to talk to you again. Life has been fun. We're keep finding new things to do, you and I, and finding our way around more kitchens and more people to show things to. So it's good to see you out there, and you're coming out with books like crazy, aren't you?
Yeah, working on a new book, finishing up a manuscript on Food Shaman, the art of quantum food. So very, very exciting. It's really a growth. So, the first book, Living Well, Eating Better, was kind of kitchen tales, a kitchen primer. Mm-hmm. And then we got into a lot of hard science, a real foundation for what I call my fat approach, which is food as therapy. So why is sourcing important? What is this gut microbiome thing?
Right.
Very interesting. I wrote The Fallacy of Calories, been out probably about 2 years late fall. And, I wrote way back there about the fact that, things like artificial sweeteners, are not health foods. They're not healthy choices. They alter the gut microbiome. There have been some early studies published in Nature there. Lo and behold, what comes out last week? But a huge meta-analysis looking at folks and saying, hey, we did this big study, and what we found out? Wow, if you take consumption of sugars, artificially sweetened beverages, right, compare them to sugar-sweetened beverages. Okay, we know that people drink a lot of those sugar-sweetened beverages, go on to gain weight, get obesity, diabetes, et cetera. No surprise there. But these zero-calorie things, you increase your risk of getting diabetes and then heart disease, obesity, by over 20%. And people think they're making – that is crazy. They think they're making healthy choices, but they're not, because there's so much out there that we're just the tip of the iceberg, really learning about. So I'm delighted, to be at the forefront. And have I got knocked around for that a couple of years ago, saying things like, hey, saturated fat isn't bad? You betcha. But I always take the attitude, Chef, and you've broken down barriers as well. If you're going to knock down a few walls, you know what? You're going to bruise your shoulder a little bit. You're going to take some lumps and bumps, and
right,
and Food Shaman is not going to disappoint those who've come to expect the unexpected from yours truly here. So I think it'll be lots of fun. And you're getting out there on the road again, because I'm going to be tracking you down like a stalker.
What?
And at some point, we're going to hook up, and I'm going to use the reference again you made fun of me for, which is we're going to be like Hope and Crosby, and we're
going to
be
man.
Out there doing this this on the road thing. And I know you can sing, because I've seen the YouTubes of you singing and dancing. You can do that for us.
Well, I'll tell you, I could dance. I could probably get away with saying I could dance. The whole singing thing is a good amount of lip syncing in there going on. So don't no matter what people say. I mean, I it's fun to be out there, and I have a lot of fun locally. We raise awareness and money for a lot of things locally, but I'm going to get back on the road again. We do for a bunch of years. I was doing a lot of food and wine festivals, but playing it closer to home because of work and family, and they've all given me the green light to say, hey, it's time you get back out there. So I'm excited.
Great.
So we're working on a couple of things along the way. And meanwhile, my favorite time of the week is to spend an hour with you, or a half hour. I don't even know how long our show is. It always feels too short, but I feel like I could, we could keep going. And then spending some time with you and talking about, the dish of the day. And today we're going to be bringing out the notorious Patagonian toothfish. As our as our main fan of the day, and since that can never sell as a fish anywhere in the world, it was renamed a long time ago as the Chilean sea bass. And then it went through its, because people are listening and go, oh, we can't eat Chilean sea bass. It's overfished. And you remember back in the 90s and the early 2000s, what all the problems we had with that. But now, and we've talked about it, you and I have talked about Patagonian toothfish being sustainable. Wow, that was a tough word to get out. I must, anyway, I don't know why I was doing that. And I even have the word in front of me. This is the problem. That was, look at that. But it's now, there are, you know, sustainable ways of raising it, and there are better parts of the world that are raising it and doing a good job at it. So we'll talk about that a little bit. But I'm going to give
go ahead. One of the things that folks can ask their fishmonger, you know, is where you get it. I remember talking to my fishmonger just a couple of years ago about that. And, you know, a lot of them, as you said, are sustainable. They're line caught. And when they're line caught, they're traceable and trackable. So, you know, check with your fishmonger, but they should be able to give you the details. And if they can't give you the details, as you were pointing out, Chef, then I think we want to be a little suspect about what we buy.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, we don't have, when we talk about people who raise animals and you can get local, whether we talk about lamb or we're talking about beef or even and hogs and those and even chicken, it, more people are doing that in most areas. Now, if you're not in an area that is well fished, where there's, you know, there's a lot of fisheries around and you can't just drive down to the pier and pick up your fish, you know, we'll have to be reliant on our fishmonger and the people that we work around, that are around us get this in. Now, whether it's a big box store or a small fishmonger, get to know them. And
yes.
if they don't make you comfortable knowing where things are from, what it's about, do some of your own research, because I can't tell you enough. It's about you doing research. I mean, we do it because it's our life, and we want to learn. But if you really want to know where you're getting stuff from, just bring up that on the internet, you're going to get a million hits on just Patagonian toothfish and what is sustainable and where does it come from that you really want to have it. Same thing with salmon. You and I both know there's farm-raised salmon that's good and there's farm-raised salmon that you pretty much want to stay away from. But I think it's about educating yourself as a consumer and as a home chef. And if you start with that, you'll go far. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, like most things in life, I think it comes down to, you know, relationships and good relationships.
Right.
And you want to have a good relationship. You know, as a chef, it's your livelihood that you've got to have these good relationships with suppliers that can give you the quality product that you demand. I mean, that's your livelihood. For the home chef, it's just as important, particularly if you're the one who's cooking and feeding your family. I mean, you've got people's lives depending on you bringing in, you know, that quality product, produce. So sourcing, again, it's a whole chapter in my new book. That's how important it is that I felt like exactly what you were talking about, Chef. What are the things we have to pay attention to? You know, how do we learn? What are the questions to ask? Get those relationships, and I'll give folks sort of the synopsis of the chapter. It's real easy. When you're buying something, whether it's a Patagonian toothfish or, you know, some ground hamburger, you know, how is it bred? Is this wild caught? Is it farmed? Is it a GMO product? Is it organic? Is it, you know, heritage breed pork? Is it an heirloom tomato? You know, so how was it bred? Then what was it fed? How was it raised? You could have this, you know, absolutely wonderful breed of pork, but you know, if they're working in what we call a CAFO or concentrated animal feeding organization, you know, I don't want any parts of that. The animals are not treated well, et cetera, you know, that's a whole nother show. But how it's raised is very important. Were the vegetables grown organically? Was this Patagonian toothfish, you know, off the seas of Patagonia, or, you know, or was it, you know, in a 2-foot pen somewhere, you know, and then finally, where was it led? So if it is processed at all, you know, how was it processed? You know, what are the details in that? You know, is it preserved naturally in some olive oil, or is it have a bunch of chemicals, you know, and colorings added to it after the fact? So all those things, you know, how was it bred? What was it fed? Where was it led? Ask yourself those three simple questions, and you're going to be an ace when it comes to sorcering.
And right. And once you start there, like we always talk about, and first of all, I actually think people now forget about everything else. They need to start by reading your books in succession and getting a good idea between
checks in the mail
between H and Eats and then the fallacy of the calorie. And just especially those are two of my favorites that they really just scream about, okay, it's bigger than just, it's bigger than just a diet pill or a this or a that. Let's look at what it was like back then and how people used to eat and then what we're doing to ourselves now. So sourcing is the most important thing, and we start from there.
Absolutely.
Read your books, then go source, and then listen to my recipe, and then we're all golden.
Yes.
See, like, it's a perfect combination.
It is, and I love chili and sea bass, and this recipe that you have for us today is pan-seared chili and sea bass with a sofrito pepper de sauce. Oh, my gosh. You know, I just want to make that sauce and pour it on everything. It sounds so good.
Well, the thing is, what's great about it, if you're not a fan of fish, it goes great with chicken as well. So if you ever want to just take a pan-seared piece of chicken, all these flavors that are in here go great on that, too. And the sofrito is what really makes the dish. It's a sauce that I always keep with me, and I'll make a preparation of this. It's basically, in essence, sofrito is not the sauce itself. It's the base that starts the sauce. So in Spanish cooking, you'll hear sofrito very often as a base of a combination of peppers and other items. And then I like to puree it and then keep it as a little batch. So I throw it into the pan, and I start it off. And then the pepperdew peppers, I think they're kind of underused. It's actually, pepperdew is a trademark name. It's a pecan pepper, and they're usually from South Africa. And it's this kind of vinegary, they're small, they're about the size, I guess you would say a ping pong ball, would that be?
Yeah, it does. And a lot of times you see them on those olive, you know, bars that are in the supermarkets where you can got to get your own fresh olives. Those little red looking peppers that are in those are often the pepperdews or the picante peppers, and I love them. They're a favorite of mine.
And they're not they're vinegary with a little vinegar bite, but they're not spicy. Yeah. They're kind of low on the heat scale, but they're really. They just have so much flavor, and they're great. And I actually do another thing with them. I bet you've done this too, but you could stuff them with goat cheese, or you could stuff them ricotta, or if you just stuff them with anything, you just pop those in your mouth. They're great as an hors d'oeuvre, an antipasto, or something like that. So I like to have those around. That brine adds a little bit of sparkle to the dish that you're making. And if you can't find pepperdew, you know, you could do a spicy vinegar pepper or banana pepper, but... you can find pepperdew anywhere, so I would recommend using it. So let's go right into
and a lot of times, I was going to say, if you don't see it on the olive bar, you know, a lot of times where they're keeping the capers and other stuff, you can find a little jar of those pepperdew peppers. And I want to backtrack for one second, because you gave a great tip, which is, you know, it's so second nature to you, but folks, this is genius here. And this is why... Chef Luca, you know, destroyed the competition on national TV on a little station called Food Network. You know, hey, keep that sofrito around, and you know, you're cooking something up. You know, chicken. It's a quick dish. It's a weeknight. You got home late. You got to get something on the table. Bam, you got some of that sofrito. You know, in the refrigerator. Did I just say bam? I meant ba-bam.
You said bam.
So ba-bam. Because you're more than a bammer, so it's a bum-bam, if we're from so you. The whole shedingalangalangalang there. You know, so, and you can just put some of that in and really kick up a pan sauce. So that is just a great tip. I mean, it's one of those things that you should definitely keep in there, because it is so very versatile. So, you know, that's a golden nugget of wisdom right there.
And also, you know, for instance, if you grow your own vegetables, and you have an abundance of peppers over a season, instead of having to worry about how to use them up, you cook them down with the sofrito, add the other ingredients. Now you have this base for a long time to go. So it's utilizing a product, but also being ready to add flavor to almost anything. You know, some people will go out and buy bouillon cubes so they could add flavor to a sauce or a stock. And I'm like, you know, if we just concentrate on what we have in front of us, we're going to be adding tons of flavor with our own little mini flavor cubes that are frozen that will knock your socks off. So I'll tell everybody how to make
it. And again, you talk about the health benefits. Well, there's nothing but, you know, a cube of destruction in those bouillon, artificial bouillon cubes. But most people don't realize peppers are actually one of the nature's best sources for vitamin C's, even more so than an orange, which we often think of for vitamin C.
I didn't know that.
You know, peppers are just packed with vitamin C. So when you're making this pepper sauce, again, you're feeding your body those things it wants, and you're bringing. You know, you're bringing, you know, when you were on Guy's Grocery Games, did he give you the whole Flavortown thing? Did you go to Flavortown?
We went to Flavortown.
Because you, my friend, now, when you use making a sofrito, you are now officially the mayor of Flavortown.
Well, I appreciate it. But it does make a difference. You know, and if you thought about this whole sauce without that, you really miss something. You don't know you're missing it if you make it without it. But you are missing something. And once you've done
I'm going to jump in again, if I may, because if you're making it without fat, you're missing out on a ton of the nutrients. Why? Because we have some of our essential vitamins, A, D, E, and K, are what we call fat-soluble vitamins. Mm-hmm. So fat not only brings the flavor, fat brings the nutrition as well. And so you're shorting yourself many of the health benefits we associate with tomatoes, you do not get if you do not cook them and serve them with fat. That's why a combination of olive oil, a fat, plus tomatoes, you know, a cornerstone of Italian cooking. I don't have to tell you, Luca, the tastes are incredible, but it's also packing, concentrating all the nutrient benefits. So here's how the delicious and nutritious go hand in hand. So you want to add that fat because you're not going to just be extracting flavor, you're extracting benefit.
Exactly.
I'm passionate about that.
I know you are.
In case you couldn't tell.
All right.
Let's make a sofrito.
All right. Let's make a sofrito. So basically, in my sofrito, and if you go to start looking up ideas for sofrito, or you come up with your own, it could be different. You could do it without. I mean, I like to put bacon in mine. I can't see anything wrong with that. But if you don't want to do it that way, you could do it without. You'll need about 4 strips of bacon, 2 fresh peppers, red or green. It's up to you. And a dried ancho chili, or even a can of like chipotle paste works here. 1 onion diced and a little bit of oil. You render your bacon down and then add the rest of the ingredients. So you're going to chop your bacon up and then render it down. And then cut everything into smaller. Any size dice will do. The smaller will cook it through faster. You're going to just reduce all the ingredients down, or cook them all down till they're soft and cook through. You're going to let them mix cool for a bit. And in a blender, you'll puree until smooth into basically a paste or a sauce. And then I transfer those into ice cube trays and then freeze them solid that way. And then they release from the tray. I put them in Ziploc bags, and I use one whenever I need if you're going to do an individual dish.
Beautiful.
This is what I'm telling
people
to do when they're at home. I go through it so much here at the restaurant, or when we make it, I'll make big batches and we'll just go through it. But if you don't, it's a great way to start any dish you have. One cube
Phenomenal. Is
pretty much perfect for what we're doing with 4 6-ounce portions of sea bass. So, you want me to go into the rest of the recipe now?
Yeah. You got me hooked,
that.
Man. You had me at sofrito, my friend.
So, in that, we got about 4 6-ounce portions of the Chilean sea bass. We're going to be using a little oil, the sofrito, some garlic, cloves that are minced, pepperdew peppers finely diced, sherry wine, butter, a little Old Bay seasoning. That's an old throwback of my 80s days. Whenever I do fish, I love a little Old Bay. Flat leaf parsley, about 3 ounces, salt and pepper, and a little flour. I like a light flour that you season a little bit, too, with the salt and pepper. Heat oil in a large sauté pan, moderately high, until hot but not smoking. Dredge the sea bass in the flour that's been seasoned. You tap it off a little bit. You want to use salt, pepper, and Old Bay in that flour seasoning. I don't know why I didn't say that before, because that's where I wanted it. Sear for about 2 to 3 minutes on each side, depending on the thickness. So flame sea bass could be a little bit thick. I think it's important that you get a nice crusty skin on each side. So go about 3 minutes. You're going to get a beautiful crust on there. The old bay will start flavoring that, and you'll absolutely love it. And then you turn it over, do the other side, and then place it in an oven for about at 200 degrees. And then we're going to create the sauce in the pan that we had the fish in. Now, I do it differently here. I actually create the sauce in the pan with the fish. Now, why I do it is it continues to cook the fish. It adds more flavor. And I really only am worried about searing the top part versus both sides. So it as the bottom part is cooking, it's going to keep some moisture. So if you like to cook everything in the pan at home, this sea bass will cook all the way through in the pan, perfect for you when you're creating the sauce. And the sauce is...
And when you're doing the presentation, we do the presentation, you're only going to see that one side anyway because the other one's going to be on the bottom.
Exactly.
So you're not lacking anything in presentation. And
as
you said, when you cook it in that sauce, you're really enhancing the flavor. So I don't think you're going to lose anything in the flavor department either.
Not at all. Add the sofrito directly to the pan with the garlic, pepperdew peppers, and saute until the garlic is nutty but not burned. Everybody has to be careful with this. Another reason why I leave the fish in, the temp of the pan is not as high as if you just had a hot pan, because it has other items in it, and adding the garlic doesn't burn it too quickly. Then you're going to remove the pan from the heat and add the sherry wine to deglaze. If you have a gas stove, please, please, please remove it, do a little sherry in there, and then place it back on lightly. Or else
unless you're a show-off.
Unless you like to show off, but don't tell me about it. I'm telling you not to do it. Although
Send all your pictures to Chef at Chef Luca on Twitter. Send him all your pictures.
There's a reason why I don't have hair anymore. I burned some of it off. Deglaze the pan with the wine, and once the wine's reduced by a little more than half of the original amount, you turn off, and then you whisk in the butter. It creates a silky smooth sauce. At this point, when you monte burr or mount butter into a sauce, you don't want the heat on too high, because you have a little bit of the vinegar that came out of the peppers, you have moisture that's coming out of your garlic and all the other stuff you're putting in, and then you've added the sherry. So you have moisture in the pan that you need to now add a fat to create a sauce.
Right.
Now, if you keep everything cooking, what you're going to find out is that you're evaporating more liquid, and then you're adding fat, and you're going to create a broken sauce. Now, I really think it's important to learn how to make a sauce. And sometimes this is where this is one of the harder ones to put together. But if you've done it correctly, you've created a silky smooth sauce. If you don't
This is great because you're really giving a great teaching lesson here, because what you're walking us through with this example is really how to create any great pan sauce.
Correct.
So when you hear chef, you're watching the shows on television, et cetera, and people are talking about, okay, well, we're going to do a pan sauce, and it looks, you know, terribly intimidating, and they're pulling it off the heat, and they're whisking in, you know, pats of cold butter. Just listen, the folks, just listen to what chef told you. These are the steps for any great pan sauce. And this, beautiful.
Yeah, and I think the key is it's not an exact one-to-one ratio, but it needs to be the right amount of liquid to fat ratio. And you know that by doing it. Now, a lot of people will break a sauce, and this is what I do demos and I break sauces on purpose. I say that I do it on purpose, but it's only because I talk so much I've left the heat on too high. But I remember the first sauce I ever made on stage, and I broke it, and I stood there and I was like, oh my God, how am I supposed to come back from this? They're expecting me to know something. So I just, I had a little bit of water on the side, and I know that all you really
you
have to
drill.
Do is add a little bit of liquid to the pan,
right.
And it comes together like magic. So it was funny because I felt like I messed up. I fixed the sauce and I showed them, and I realized just how important it was to show them that, because it's happened to everyone. We've all broken a sauce in the middle of a pan sauce, and to bring it back that quickly and that easily made them all realize they could do it too. Now I actually do it on purpose, where I'll break the sauce so I could bring it back together. It's not optimum, but it doesn't take a lot. So it's a moisture to fat ratio, and then you finish it with a little bit of chopped parsley, if you like cilantro in this at this point, and your salt and peppering, and I don't think I even talked about the salt and pepper, but you salt and pepper to taste, and as you go, and it's a beautiful, simple sauce. Now, the pepper from the light spice from the sofrito comes out, the vinegar pepper comes out, and all together, it will knock your socks off because it's almost understated in flavor, but it packs a punch in the end.
Oh, like all good things, and it's like so many of your recipes, one of the reasons I'm such a fan of your cooking is, if I were to describe, simply elegant. I mean, it's elegant, okay. And it's you let the flavors of the food speak. You know, it's and you step aside, you make the food the star in such a simply elegant way. It's just masterful. And, you know, that to me is the sign of a true master chef, is the way you cook, the way you present, the way you walked us through this sofrito. You know, that's why you're who you are. That's why you can do the things you do. You make it sound so simple, but you're simply elegant in execution. I mean, it's like watching Jordan drain a three-pointer or, you know, slash to the hoop. I mean, I watch him and I'm like, I could do that. And it's like, no, I couldn't.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I really think I go by the adage that if I can do it, anybody can. I mean, I've gotten this far saying, I've felt cooking has been so simple, and I think sometimes we make it overcomplicated, and I think we go back to what we've been talking about is source well, find good products, and sometimes just stay out of the way. Don't try to overthink. And I think that's what, and part of that is me being a little lazy. I don't want to do too many things. I haven't made a foam ever in my life. I don't even know what to, unless it's going on a cappuccino. There's no foams or these kind of like whimsical things on top of my food. It is what it is, and it's meant to be that way, you know?
And let me tell you, folks, what it is absolutely delicious. So this is something you definitely want to try at home. And hey, if you can't get chili and sea bass, you know, try it with any other fish. It'll work great.
Oh, sure.
As Chef mentioned, this works great with chicken. Chef, thanks so much again for sharing your wisdom with us this week.
Always.
Look forward to doing more cooking with you. Look for us on the road somewhere. We don't know where we'll be, but we're going to make it happen. And until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.